Yeah, believe it or not, there are. I mean, and there are four people in the book who use their last breath to cheer for their favorite football team.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie for Reason TV. Today we're talking to Robert K. Elder, author of Last Words of the Executed.
Rob, thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
What is your what's your goal with publishing the book, which is a collection of final words from people who are being put to death?
Essentially, it's really a non-political goal. My central question, the driving question, was if these are the most dangerous, reviled members of society, why does it remain a cultural value to record what they say?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's look at a couple of examples, because this is an incredible survey of hundreds of years worth of American executions. Sarah Good, convicted of witchcraft in the Massachusetts Bay Colony in 1692, she says, "I am no more a witch than you are a wizard, and if you take away my life, God will give you blood to drink." What do you make of that?
I included it because it was one of the most vitriolic. She's obviously mad. She was a very strong personality. I didn't include all the quotes I found in the book because on these shores since 1608, 16,000 people have been executed. So this is sort of a smattering of those. And I chose ones that were compelling, that show personality and some life experience.
Well, and the end of life experience, right?
Yes.
Good had also, she had been involved in the Anne Hutchinson trial and whatnot, a great act of dissent in colonial America. Who recorded her words, or where did they appear?
I think they just come from court records and diaries. I mean, it's a mix, especially with the early ones, because last words were sometimes recorded and published in pamphlets, right, as sort of spiritual guides, right, to dignified dying, and sometimes there were newspaper accounts.
Right. Well, let's go to 1977, a very famous execution. It really got the ball rolling again. In 1977, Gary Gilmore, his final words were, "Let's do it." Yeah. What's going on there?
Well, he was the first execution after the moratorium in 1977, and the first by firing squad.
He requested a firing squad.
Yeah, right? In Utah, you could choose. And in fact, it's against the law now. They no longer execute people by firing squad, except for the people who were condemned before that law.
Right.
So, for example, Ronnie Lee Gardner will be executed, I believe. It's scheduled for June 18th of this month.
The immediate entry before Gary Gilmore is James Roger, another Utah execution from 1960. He's asked if he had any last request, and he says, "Why, yes, a bulletproof vest."
Yes.
Is there a lot of this is, I guess it's not gallows humor,
it's actual gallows humor, yeah. Yeah, believe it or not, there are. And there are four people in the book who use their last breath to cheer for their favorite football team.
Wow. Who's the favorite?
Two Raiders, one Cowboys, and one Cleveland Browns.
Do you think did that work that into the promotional materials for those clubs?
I don't know.
And it's clear that the last Browns fan was then executed, right?
Yes.
Carla Faye Tucker, who famously was the first woman executed in Texas since, I believe, just after the Civil War. She was involved in, I guess, a double murder where she and a boyfriend brutally pickaxed people to death. She famously said that she had an orgasm every time she swung the axe into the body. Her last words are, "Yes, sir, I would like to say thanks to all of you, the Thornton family, Jerry D's family, that I am so sorry. I hope God will give you peace with this. Baby, I love you. Ron, give Peggy a hug for me. Everybody has been so good to me. I love all of you very much. Et cetera. I love all of you very much. I will see you all when you get there. I will wait for you." One of the things that I found interesting, there's a level of banality here, to be quite honest. How does that, is that common?
The sort of ritual of either apologizing to victims or victims' families and, saying goodbye to people by name is actually sort of new. Because especially early executions, they were in front of a crowd, so there was a sense of oration. It was an event. But as executions became more and more of a private event behind prison walls, mm-hmm, they became more intimate, and you have people directly addressing people on the other side of the glass. There's that element to it.
What's your hope in terms? You said this is not a political book, but what? How do you want this to intersect with death? Death penalty discourse.
Sure. Well, I really did want to make it a non-political book, just because if you have an opinion on one side of the issue or the other, you're just publishing for the choir, basically. I really wanted to talk about this in cultural terms and just sort of make people think about death penalty. And again, this ritual, why? What can we learn? Why do we still keep them?
What are you, pro or anti-death penalty?
I'm doing my best to sort of just keep that.
Can we, so you don't want to say?
Or do you?
No, I'm actually neutral. I mean, it's a true journalistic position.
Now, the overall frame of the book, and I say this as somebody who's opposed to the death penalty.
Sure.
I don't think that the state should have the right to take a life.
Sure.
I mean, they should protect people by walling dangerous people away. But you've got a foreword by Studs Terkel, who curiously died 2 years ago. So
unfortunately,
that's,
it's a great final word from him.
Though. Yeah, one of my regrets is he was so supportive of the project, but he didn't get to see it ultimately.
But then you have Sister Helen Prejean from the author of Dead Man Walking, and you have the executive director of the Center on Wrongful Convictions. I mean, is this an anti-death penalty book, ultimately?
From my perspective, no. But and when we were asking for people to weigh in, those are the only people that responded.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's really not an anti-death penalty book. In fact, folks who are anti-death penalty, I've gotten a little bit of flack for including sort of more information on cases that are recent that were traditionally liberal causes. For example, Sacco and Vanzetti.
Mm-hmm.
While I include a little note that says, this is among the 39 cases that the Center on Wrongful Convictions says, they're probably innocent or there's enough evidence for reasonable doubt, I also include the fact that in 2005 a letter from Upton Sinclair surfaced in which he said he talked to their lawyer who admitted making up the whole thing and ginning their alibis.
Right. Do you are we in the twilight of the death penalty in America? Because there has been a huge amount of notoriety of people who are on death row who have been exculpated by genetic evidence or whatever. Executions seem to be going down from where they had been for all sorts of reasons. Is the death penalty really being relegated to history?
I don't know. Every time, I've been touring the East Coast and I have people tell me on either side of the issue it's going away or whatnot. One of the most interesting things that I'm finding is that states are prosecuting fewer death penalty cases because they're so expensive. It's become a fiscal issue. That's been the most amazing thing because, it's cheaper for them to put somebody in life or prison. And I'm not even talking about the actual cost. I'm talking the cost of prosecuting them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, maybe that's as it should be, right? I mean, if this is, it's the most serious decision a state can make, right?
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank Robert K. Elder, author of Last Words of the Executed, for talking to Reason TV. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.